Good evening to all. Our study this evening takes us to the Gospel of John, the Gospel of John in chapter 5. We want to concern ourselves with the first 15 verses of that chapter. As you're turning to the Gospel of John in chapter 5, I want to remind you of what John said and the purpose of his writing in John 20 and verse 30 and 31. John records there that truly, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. John tells us the purpose for which he wrote was that we might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing we may have life in his name that is in him. So John recorded 7 miracles, but he recorded these 7 to cause us to believe in the deity of Jesus Christ, to cause us to believe that he is the Son of God. Earlier in our studies of the Gospel of John, we've looked at 2 of those already. We looked at the changing of water into wine in John chapter 2. And we also looked at the healing of the nobleman's son in John chapter 4. Today we want to look at a healing that took place at the pool of Bethesda. This is recorded for us in the Gospel of John chapter 5, verse 1 through verse 15. I want to begin reading at verse 1 from the New King James Version and read through verse 15 in our text. The Gospel of John, chapter 5, and verse 1. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is in Jerusalem by the sheep gate a pool, which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having 5 porches. In these lay a great multitude of sick people, lame, blind, paralyzed, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain time into the pool and stirred up the water. Then whoever stepped in first, after the stirring of the water, was made well of whatever disease he had. Now a certain man was there who had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him laying there and knew that he had already been in that condition a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be made well?" The sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up. But while I am coming, another steps down before me." Jesus said to him, "Rise, take up your bed and walk." And immediately the man was made well, took up his bed and walked. And that day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said to him who was cured, "It is the Sabbath. It is not lawful for you to carry your bed." He answered them, "He who made me well said to me, 'Take up your bed and walk.'" Then they asked him, "Who is the man who said to you, 'Take up your bed and walk'?" But the one who was healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn, a multitude being in that place. Afterward, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, "See, you have been made well. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you." The man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him well. Let's begin to look at the text closely now. John chapter 5 and in verse 1. After this, the text begins with. After this simply refers back, in context, to the previous chapter and the things that went on in that chapter as John records them. After this, there was a feast of the Jews. There was a feast of the Jews. A feast, not the feast. What feast is under consideration? We do not know. But there were 3 main feasts of which the Jews participated in every year of which God required: Pentecost, the Passover, and the Feast of Tabernacles. It could have been any one of those feasts, or some other feast required by the law. Most believe that the feast under consideration is the feast of Passover. But again, we simply do not know. After this, there was a feast of the Jews. The Jews here, the phrase, the Jews, is used in reference to the Jewish people as a whole. We're going to see that term, the Jews, used later on in the context in a very different way. And John uses it in a very different way that we'll be looking at, more so than Matthew, Mark, and Luke. He uses the phrase, the Jews, later on in the context, to refer to those who were antagonistic toward Jesus, those who were hostile toward him. It has reference primarily to the Jewish leaders of that day, who, of course, through envy and jealousy, had a desire that Jesus be put to death, and eventually would bring that about. So after this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is in Jerusalem, by the sheep gate, a pool, which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having five porches. Note that, there is in Jerusalem. I'll not take much time at this point to talk about this, but I want to mention it. And if we have time, later on in our study, we might be able to come back to it, if not, some later day. Now there is, note that, present tense, there is in Jerusalem. Because of the present tense, there is in Jerusalem by the sheep gate a pool. There is a reference there, because is present tense, that Jerusalem is still standing and that pool is still present. Now that might not mean much to you, but it means a great deal to those who debate the time of the writing of the Gospel of John. There are many who believe that John wrote late in the first century, perhaps 80 AD or even 94 AD. But this seems to indicate that Jerusalem and the pool was still much standing, that it had not been destroyed by the Romans in 70 AD. It lends a great deal of support to the idea that John wrote before the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. We'll end the discussion of that there, but as I said, if time allows, we'll come back to a discussion of it. Nonetheless, there is in Jerusalem by the sheep gate. I believe, if I remember correctly, the King James Version, instead of sheep gate, says sheep market. Of course, that which is under consideration cannot be determined by the word market or the word gate, for if you look in your Bible, you'll note those are in italics. That means they've been added by the translators. But there is some word that evidently needs to be added, unless we simply read the text, there is in Jerusalem by the sheep pool. So there must be something mentioned in reference to this sheep. What is in reference? What's being spoken of? Perhaps it is the gate that was entered on the northeast corner of the city of Jerusalem, in and close to the temple, by which sheep were brought into the city that they may be sold and offered as sacrifice in the temple. And so, in most of the modern versions, it's rendered, instead of market, it's rendered sheep gate. So there is in Jerusalem, by the sheep gate, a pool, which is called in Hebrew or Aramaic, Bethesda. The word Bethesda means a house of pity or house of mercy. This is a fitting name, of course, for this pool, as men and women, no doubt, were seeking mercy in the healing of the water from that pool. But it is also enlightening in the fact that Jesus, out of pity and compassion for this one on this occasion, would extend mercy to him in the healing of his body. Around this pool, it is said that it had five porches. We might render the word porches here as porticos, or covered roof places. That is, there were five around by which people could get out of the hot, burning sun, or out of the wind or rain underneath these porches. And verse 3, in these, that is, in these porches or in these porticos, lay a great multitude of sick people. That is, people who were sick or diseased in one way or another. And he mentions those who were blind and those who were lame and those who were paralyzed. Of course, the word paralyzed in the King James Version is rendered by the word withered, if I remembered correctly. It means dried up. That is, there were those who were paralyzed. That is, their limbs, maybe their hands or legs, had been dried up. The muscles had shrunken, and they were unable to walk. They were unable to use their limbs, even if it were their hands. And so, underneath these porticos were a great multitude, or a great number of people, who were sick, waiting, no doubt, for the moving of the water, the text says at the end of verse 3. Waiting for the moving of the water. Now, you might be reading a particular version that does not have the last portion of verse 3 or all of verse 4 in the text. Waiting for the moving of the water, and all of verse 4 is omitted in some versions, because many believe that that which is mentioned, the latter portion of verse 3 and all of verse 4, were added sometime by some scribe to explain why it was that the people were waiting by the pool. They believe that, evidently, it's kind of a commentary on the purpose of them waiting there. And this having been added by a scribe sometime later in history was not a part of the immediate text or revelation to John. But even though they would omit the latter portion of verse 3 and verse 4, it is in many of the versions, the King James Version, the New King James Version, waiting for the moving of the waters in italics, and all of verse 4 is in italics in the American Standard Version. But it's set off by brackets in the New American Standard Bible to indicate that it's not part of the original text. Whether it is part of the original text or not, I do not know. Some versions of the text, that is, the original Greek text, that are people have access today, it is found in those manuscripts, and some it is not. So it's hard to determine whether it should be there or should not be there. The debate continues. But even with those versions that omit it, nonetheless, they still have verse 7 and what is mentioned in verse 7 regarding the stirring or the moving of the water there. So even though they might admit what is contained at the latter portion of verse 3 and all of verse 4, they do not leave out the fact that the stirring or the troubling of the water is mentioned in verse 7. And so, for our sake, we'll simply read through it and make comments on it as necessary. So they were waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain time into the pool and stirred up the water. Then whoever stepped in first, after the stirring of the water, was made well of whatever disease he had. Many believe, as I said earlier, that was the common thought of the day, that's what was taking place here, that's why people were around the pool waiting to be healed, because they believed in their mind that an angel of God would come down at different times and stir or trouble the water, and that the one who went in first would be healed. Now, we'll take that just as it is stated, and move on in the text. Verse 5. Now a certain man was there who had an infirmity or a sickness 38 years. 38 years is not the age of the man, nor is it the length of time that the man has been laying by this pool, waiting on the stirring of the water that he might be healed. 38 years is the time that he has had this disease, or this infirmity, or this sickness. Evidently, because we read later in the text that he is unable to move by himself, unable to walk, we understand perhaps that he is paralyzed. And he has been in that condition for 38 years. Now, if you're not familiar with someone who has been paralyzed, and perhaps paralyzed for that length of time in the legs, you know, perhaps if you are familiar, or if you're not, the muscles of the legs simply begin to shrink. They begin to fade away because the legs are not being used, cannot be used because they're paralyzed. They're immobile. One just has to drag them around. And so the muscles completely shrink. After a period of time, there is nothing but skin and bone. This man is in a terrible state, being in that condition for 38 years. Now, on the scene comes Jesus in verse 6. When Jesus saw him laying there and knew that he already had been in that condition a long time. This is the first thing we notice in the context that tells us that Jesus is more than just a man, that he is indeed deity, the Son of God. It says, when Jesus saw him laying there and knew that he had been in that condition for a long time. Jesus saw him laying there and knew that he had been in that condition. He already knew this. He did not need someone to tell him this. He already knew the man's condition. And he knew he had been in that condition for a very long time. Jesus knows all about our troubles and all about our trials. He knows all about our life. He doesn't have to be told. God sees all that we do. God knows all that we do. He is omniscient. He is all-knowing. And so Jesus did not have to learn this through somebody telling him. He did not have to learn this through the man who is paralyzed telling him. He already knew the man's condition and knew that he had been in it for a long time. The omniscience of God is spoken of here in a very indirect way, simply by the word that he knew. He asked the sick man, he said to him, "Do you want to be made well?" Now for many that might seem to be a dumb or stupid question. Do you want to be made well? But this is another question or another statement that is made that teaches us about the deity of Christ. God from the very beginning made man with free will. Man can choose. Man can make a determination for himself. He has the free will to choose to do evil or choose to do that which is good. We see that from the very beginning in the Garden of Eden. And so he asked the man on this occasion, "Do you want to be made well?" There are many people today who are in bad physical shape because of some sickness, because of some disease or infirmity of the flesh. You might ask them, do they want to be made well? Many would say that they do. Some would say that they do not. And even though some may say they do, they may not. The reason being is because some enjoy receiving pity and compassion from others because of their infirmity. Some would even desire to stay in their disease state because of pity and compassion for others, that they might receive some kind of financial gain. That is, out of covetousness, out of a desire for financial gain, they had rather be in a disease state than in a hill state. Jesus asked the question to determine the will of the man. Does he will to be healed, or does he will to be and to remain in the state in which he is in? What is true in regard to one physically is also true in regard to one's spiritual condition. Some people have no will or desire to be made spiritually whole, spiritually healed, that is, forgiven of their sins. Unless man wills to be made well physically, he perhaps will never be made well physically. If he has no desire, he'll seek no treatment. He'll seek no healing. The same is true in regard to one's spiritual health. If he has no will, no desire, no determination to be made whole spiritually, to be forgiven of sins, he will not seek that. So Jesus asked to determine the man's will. Not that Jesus did not know his will, but he asked because he wanted the man to demonstrate for him his desire to be made well. The sick man answered him in verse 7 and said, "Sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up." Note, he responds with respect. The word translated "sir" here is the word oftentimes translated "Lord," kurios. Here it is used as a respectful title to Jesus because the man does not know who he is, but nonetheless he shows respect to him. "Sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up." He tells Jesus on this occasion he has a desire to be healed. He has a determination to be healed, but he has no one to help him to be able to bring about that healing. And he also says, "But while I am coming, another steps down before me." So he has a desire, but he needs assistance. He needs help. And so Jesus, on this occasion, provides that help. It is said in verse 8, Jesus said to him, "Rise, take up your bed and walk." Rise, take up your bed, and walk. So the man having a desire to be healed, Jesus heals him through this command. Here we see the power of Christ, the power of God. Through the command to rise, take up your bed, and walk, the man is healed. Simply by the words that Jesus spoke, the man is healed. He is made whole. He is made well. Because verse 9 says, "And immediately the man was made well." He was made whole. He was cured. Immediately. Straightway. Right away. Instantly, he was healed. Simply by the words of Jesus Christ. We also saw that when we studied in John chapter 4 in regard to the healing of the nobleman's son. As Jesus tried to get the nobleman to have faith in his word, have faith in the word of Christ. Here, Jesus speaks the word and the man is healed. Just as in John 4, when Jesus told the nobleman that his son was healed, or that his son lives, his son indeed lived that very moment. That is, he was restored to health. Here, the same thing takes place. Simply by the word of Christ, the word of Christ brought about the healing of this man. Immediately, or instantly, the man was made well. Now, isn't that in contrast to the healing that many miracle workers claim today? Their healings are not this kind of healing. They'll not heal someone who has been paralyzed for 38 years. It would be evident that no healing would take place when muscles do not come to appear in the leg again, when there is no strength, no vigor or no life in the limb that has been paralyzed for 38 years. Jesus is more than just a man. He is indeed deity, the Son of God. Who could do this but God only? Immediately the man was made well, took up his bed, and walked. That is, he obeyed the command of Jesus. And that day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said to him, "Who was cured? Who was made well? Who was made whole? It is the Sabbath. It is not lawful for you to carry your bed." Here we have the phrase, "the Jews." The Jews therefore said to him, well, this man was a Jew. But the Jews here, unlike what we mentioned at the beginning of our study in verse 1, the phrase here is used in regard to those who stand in opposition to Jesus, those who are hostile to him, the religious leaders and those who followed their every word during this particular period of time. Jesus had not commanded this man on this occasion to violate the law of Moses in taking up his bed and carrying it on this occasion, even though it was the Sabbath. But these Jews said to the man that was cured, "It is the Sabbath. It is not lawful for you to carry your bed." It was not lawful according to their tradition. Their tradition had become law to them, and it was unlawful according to their tradition, but it was not unlawful according to the law of Moses. Because if that was the case, Jesus would have told and encouraged someone and even commanded them to commit sin. And that, my friends, simply did not happen. Verse 12. Then they asked him, "Who is the man who said to you?" Or excuse me, let's go back to verse 11. He answered them, "He who made me well said to me, 'Take up your bed and walk.'" Now this, of course, went over the head of those who had asked him the question in verse 10. "He who made me well said to me." This man had reasoned in his mind that if Jesus had the power and the authority to heal him, someone who had been paralyzed for 38 years, then he had the power and authority to command him to take up his bed and walk. Of course, the Jews on this occasion, those who stood in opposition to Jesus, did not even consider the miracle that had been performed. They did not even consider the mercy that had been extended to this man in his healing. All they were concerned about was the keeping of their tradition and who it was that commanded him to take up his bed and walk. Verse 12. Then they asked him, "Who is the man who said to you, 'Take up your bed and walk'?" But the one who was healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn, a multitude being in that place. Understand here that this man had been healed by Jesus, but he did not know who Jesus was, for Jesus had withdrawn. He had slipped away in the crowd as the multitude took his place. As this man was healed, you could almost imagine what took place on that occasion as people would have come to his side, seeing what had taken place. And of course, Jesus took that time to slip away into the crowd, to withdraw unnoticed. But the man did not know who Jesus was. Miracle workers today say that a miracle can only be performed if one believes. This man was not called upon to believe that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus never inquired about his faith or belief in him as the Christ. This man did not even know who Jesus was. So the miracle workers today are inaccurate when they say that miracle-working power is brought about by one's faith. No, Miracle-working power is brought about when one has the power of God residing in him, as Jesus did. Those who claim to work miracles today simply have not that kind of power and authority to bring about the working of miracles, and that's why they require faith, or say they require faith. So when they fail in performing a miracle, they simply say the one on whom the miracle was performed did not have enough faith. That was not what took place on this occasion. No, Jesus is proved to be the Christ, the Son of God, simply by commanding him to rise, take up his bed, and walk. Verse 13, but the one who was healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn, a multitude being in that place. Afterwards, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, see, you have been made well. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you. Afterwards, that is, after what had taken place, Jesus found him in the temple. He found the man that had been healed in the temple. Before this, the man had not the occasion to go to the temple and offer gratitude and thanksgivings to God like everyone else. But now that he's been healed, he goes to the temple evidently for that particular purpose. And on this occasion, we do not know how much time has elapsed, he is found in the temple by Jesus. And Jesus said, see, you have been made well, you have been made whole, you have been cured. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you. I do not believe that Jesus is connecting sin with the man's paralyzed condition. I believe Jesus is simply making a general statement, such as the statement that is made in Romans 3 and verse 23. All have sinned and fall short or come short of the glory of God. Come short or fall short is in the present tense. That is, all have sinned and continue to come short or fall short of the glory of God. This man, like all other men, had sinned in his life, and Jesus is simply telling him, sin no more. Sin no more. Some versions render it in the present tense, do not continue to sin, lest a worse thing come upon you. The worst thing that could come upon him than a diseased body, an infirmed body, an unhealthy or unwholesome body, is the judgment. That's worse than any physical disease. The spiritual disease that brings about eternal destruction to one soul is worse than physical death brought about by physical disease. That's all Jesus is saying on this occasion. But this also teaches that Jesus has something to do with the judgment, which if one will consider the following context mentioned here in the Gospel of John, judgment will be given to Jesus Christ to carry out. And so sin no more. Do not continue in sin, lest the worst thing come upon you. That is, come upon you in the judgment. Not a physical disease, but a destruction of the soul because of your continual sin. Verse 15, the man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him well. Now we do not know the thinking of the man who left the temple and told the Jews, that is, those who were antagonistic and hostile toward Jesus, that is, indeed, it was Jesus who had made him well. We do not know his purpose or his thinking. Was he trying to clear himself of the charge that had been made that he was carrying his bed on the Sabbath day? Or was he trying to get them to believe in Jesus as the Christ, the Son of God? Because it was Jesus that had healed him. It was Jesus that had brought about this miracle. But nonetheless, he informed the Jews that indeed it was Jesus. It was Jesus who is the Christ, the Son of God. From this, we learn that Jesus is deity. He is God. And believing that, it should move or motivate us to have faith in His Word. When He says in Mark 16 and verse 15, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He who believes and is baptized will be saved." Put faith in His Word. Have faith in that Word of Christ, because He is the Son of God. He can bring about physical healing, and He can bring about spiritual healing. The question of the hour is, do you want to be made well? Do you want to be made well physically? Ask Jesus. He stands ready and willing. He knows your condition. He knows your situation. Go to Him in prayer and pour out your soul unto Him. But Jesus can heal you spiritually. Do you have a desire? Do you want to be made well spiritually? Do you seek the cleansing and the salvation of your soul? It is found only in Christ. Remember, it was written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in His name, literally in Him. That's where life is found, in Christ. And the only way we can get into Christ, into that relationship and in that union, is by being baptized into Him. Galatians 3:26-27. Romans 6, verse 3 and 4. Be baptized into Christ, into that relationship. Receive healing from the spiritual condition that you're in. Have your sins forgiven in the water of baptism. Have them washed away. If you're subject to that invitation, or as a child of God, have done that in times past but have sin in your life, repent of that sin. Confess that sin. And we'll pray with you and for you. We'll do anything that we can to help you bring about your own spiritual healing through the aid and help and all-powerful Jesus Christ, the Son of God. The lesson is yours. Thank you very much for your kind attention.